Yes, indeed, WTIC. Thanks so much for being here. Joining us now is an interesting guest, fascinating guest, because, you know, we've been talking a lot about prison reform, and we have Michael Leibowitz on regularly, who's been 22 years in the Connecticut prison system. Joining us now is a guy who spent time in prison in both Florida and Massachusetts, and he is a children's book author. Now, that's a pretty unusual resume. Let's welcome Peter Thomas to WTIC. Hi, Peter. Thank you for being here.
How you doing, Todd? It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So tell us your story. How did you get to be in prison? And, yeah, let's start there.
Todd, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with how you're brought up and raised, of course. You know, when you come from, like, the projects area of Cambridge and used to hang around Boston a lot, we had different values. This is going back in the 60s and 70s, different world, and we had different values in my neighborhood where I grew up in my projects area. And, you know, we didn't aspire to be doctors or teachers or lawyers. We wanted to be tough guys and criminals and gangsters, and that's what we emulated, and that's what we became, you know.
So you were surrounded by people who were in the business of crime growing up, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. From the time I was old enough to know what it was about, yeah. These are the people we idolized when we were kids, you know. We wanted to be just like them.
Yeah, so when you say your upbringing has a lot to do with it, this is the modeling you received. This is what your image of an adult was.
Exactly, exactly. Like I said, Todd, we never thought about being a doctor or a lawyer. You know, we wanted to be the tough guy riding around with the car and the girls and the money and, you know, all the bling. They didn't even call it bling back then. I don't know what
That's
they
right.
called it back
so,
then.
So how did your life progress? Did you get into crime as a teenager? How did it work?
No. My poor mother, when I think about what she went through when I was a kid, she did her best to keep me out of the life that I was centered in the middle of. She sent me to parochial school, you know, did all the things that a single mother could possibly do. And, you know, the life that was surrounding me more or less creeped in when I was about 11, 12 years old. You know, we started smoking pot behind the firehouse when I was a crossing guy with the orange belt on, and started from pot, and then you get into the lifestyle of the pot and the partying and the drinking. And I mean, this is, you know, 12, 13 years old, Todd, mm-hmm. back then. And when we were kids, the drinking age was 18, so we were getting into clubs and bars when we were 16, 17, you know, different lifestyle. And it's just, when you're in that kind of life, money is needed to do, you know, to maintain that lifestyle.
Sure.
And you're not going to go out and get a job so you can get the money to maintain that lifestyle. So, of course, you come up with creative ways to finance your habits.
Yeah, so share some of those creative ways so we can get the picture.
Well, you know, first it comes into stealing. You know, you break into cars when you're kids and you take a stereo, you know, this, that, or the other thing. And then as you get older, the crimes get older. And, you know, before you know it, you got a gun in your hand, you're out there taking what you want. You know, I it's very painful for me, Todd, to even mm-hmm. really talk about a lifestyle that it seems like, almost like when I think about it, it's like, was I watching a movie or something, you know?
Yeah, because really it's not real to you.
No, it's not real to me anymore. But, I mean, I think about some of the things I did back then. You know, it's just, because I have a wife, a family now, the house, the picket fence, the whole nine yards. And, you know, what didn't mean anything to me then is the world to me now. So it's very hard to think about. But I mean, yeah, when you surround yourself with the people of the lifestyle and what it is you don't think, that's how you get into the trouble, by not thinking about it before you do it.
And what was the turning point for you?
Turning point was 30 years ago when I came up to, I was living in Florida, living every day like it was my last, still going at it with the drugs, the drinking, the booze and everything. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, I came up to, from Florida, my grandmother was sick, and I met my then was wife, and little 5'2" Italian girl, and she kicked my butt to it. You know, she seen something inside of me I didn't know was there. And
So that was a transformative moment, falling in love and realizing that you wanted to have a normal adult life. Is that what happened?
Well, Todd, you know what it is? See, I've done a lot of work with DARE and with MAD about going into speaking. I work for I've done speaking engagement with the Correctional Education Association, the CEA, Madison, Wisconsin. And I think what it is this, Todd. When you're a kid and you grow up into the lifestyle that you're surrounded by, you carry that mentality with you till you're in your early 20s, you know, mid-20s, late 20s, early 30s. And then as life progresses around you, you make a choice. You either experience life with the marriage, with the kids, with the driving, getting mm-hmm. a car, working, the real things in life that we sure. all attain. You know, most of us just take for granted because it's a progressive thing that they're bought into when they come into the world. But the criminals and the kids that don't have that at first, when they reach the peak of their criminal years, which I've studied it is in the late 20s, early 30s.
That's all right, excuse me, I'm going to interrupt you a second, and then we'll let you finish this. It's really interesting what you're describing, this developmental point that you reach, and there's kind of a fork in the road. Peter Thomas is our guest. He's a children's book author and spent time in prison in Massachusetts and Florida. So we're talking with Peter Thomas. He is a... Well, it's delightful. I'm looking at the screen right now with his children's books, and it's just hard to put it together with the life that he's describing, which is what makes him fascinating. And Peter, is the website that people should go to if they want to see your work areallygreatstory.com? Is that the one?
Yes, that's correct, Tom. All one word, areallygreatstory.com.
Okay, so finish up about, you were describing that you reached a developmental point in your life where you realized... You had to decide, were you going to be a punk your whole life or were you going to have a normal life?
Right, and try to make something of it, Todd, you know, and just try to do something with life. I mean, you blink your eyes and 5-10 years goes by. I mean, it's insane. And, you know, it's funny, Todd, I've always been a writer, so I think that I was always allowed to go through life observing it. And I mean, being a participant in it, but also like two steps back, always like observing it, always, you know, assessing the situation I was in, always like looking at life as like a writer, I think.
Well, that's interesting that you were combining living life at a real street level at the same time that you were able to watch it from a higher altitude and analyze it. So do you see that as what helped you be able to make a transition?
Well, Todd, you know what it was? Like, I'm from a big Italian family. I mean, a big Italian family. There was over 1,000 people in my family tree 25 years ago when my great-grandfather came over from Italy, passed away. I mean, so I don't even know how many of them there are now. And, you know, there was a lot of drinking in my family, a lot of, you know, very boisterous, loud Italian people. And, I mean, you get caught up in a lifestyle that, you know, is your family and a lifestyle that's your street, your neighborhood, your friends.
Sure.
And you really don't get a chance to look at life until you're into the middle of it. Like, I knew when I was, you know, in my 30s that this isn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I knew.
Okay,
when I
was but you said you had this writer side. I just wanted to flesh that out. How did this writer character, who was part of all this rowdiness, how did he manifest inside of you?
Todd, you know what's weird? When I was a kid and when I was out raising hell with all my friends and, you know, drinking and drugging and everything, I'd wake up, I would stay home and write poems in my bedroom. I'd never told any of my friends that I was, you know, that I used to write poetry and that I used to like to write short stories and everything. I never, you know, they would have, if they ever found that out.
Yeah, yes.
You know,
so it's like there were two Peters fighting for dominance.
Exactly. All my life, though, I've always been like that, Todd. And like I said, that allowed me to always observe my life, go through life as an observer. And I think that was what helped pull me out of it when it was time. You get to a point in your life, Todd, where you know. I remember the day like it was yesterday. I had been drinking and drugging. I threw up blood for, you know, probably 3 or 4 hours when I woke up in the morning. I looked in the mirror at myself and I said, is this what it's coming to? Is this what you're going to do? Is this how you want to spend the rest of your life like this? I mean, it was it. And that was the day that I
just like that, out of nowhere.
That's where it was, Todd. I took a shower, went to the phone book. At the time, it was the Yellow Pages, none of this Google stuff. I found an AA meeting near me. I went to the AA meeting. And I met a wonderful sponsor then. He was a great man, Al, and I love him. He passed away years ago, but he was my godsend at the time. And he told me, he said, if you're serious about this, I want you to do 30 meetings in 30 days. He said, just bring the body and the mind will show up. I said, wow. All right. I didn't understand what the hell he was talking about, but I...
Well, you learned quick enough, right?
I did. I just
okay. So, Peter, we just have 5 minutes left. So I want to switch over and talk about your experience in prisons, because a big part of our motivation here is to understand prisons, and as a prison reform movement grows in this country, to know what the real problems are. And you are in a unique position as having been in two states, Florida, which has one kind of approach to incarceration, and Massachusetts another. Can you paint a picture for us of what it's like to be in prison in each state and what the differences are?
Well, Todd, it's jail is full of people that belong there. You know what I mean? And that's they didn't not do anything to get in there. So what happens is the jails look at it as a form of incapacitation. They're going to incapacitate somebody for X.
In other words, to keep you from hurting people or doing damage.
To keep you from hurting somebody else. They think that that's the best thing to do, take them out of the street. And that's why America's jails are so overpopulated now, Todd. Did you know that back in the 70s, there used to be 100 in every 100,000 people were incarcerated. 100 in every 100,000.
Okay.
Now it's 500 in every 100,000. They're putting people away for no reason, you know, for crimes that don't belong to be put away for. The jails are overcrowded, Todd. As far as prison reform goes, they need prison reform so bad it's sickening. They don't
okay.
have anything in there when I was in there.
So paint a quick picture of what it was like in Massachusetts being in prison there.
Massachusetts was survival. The best part of the day was that night when that cell door closed and you had no new cuts, no new openings. You had, you know, you made it. I mean, you were through another day.
And the threat was from the prison guards or from your fellow inmates?
From everybody, Todd. You don't know who to trust in there. You don't know who your friends are. When you first get in there, it's really tough. It's really just like any prison is. Then after you get in and you get accepted by certain people and
you get into routines and you know who you can trust.
Then you know what's what and who you can trust and who you can't.
All right, tell us about Florida then compared to Massachusetts.
Florida is more structured. They really do have a more structured prison, more structured. It was more like boot camp. I was in the Army, so I know it was more like a basic military. When you go into processing center there, boy, I tell you what, Todd, they are so strict. They make boot camp look like a summer camp. It was crazy, insane. These guards had total control over their inmates, the prisoners. They did what they were told. There was no outbreaks. It was bad. And if they caught you doing something out of line, boy, forget about it, Todd. You got beat pretty bad.
Okay, so the fear in Florida was less from your fellow inmates and more from the system itself.
Oh yes, from the corrections. Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Quickly, what it seems to me. Tell me if this assumption is right, that prison it doesn't actually reform anybody. It doesn't offer incentives to go or lessons that you can bring into the outside world in order to redeem yourself and make sure that you don't get back in.
No, Todd. Right now, prison is to incapacitate someone. That's what it's for. Take them off the streets. Hopefully, if they do enough time in there, remember when I told you the peak age of the criminal is, you know, 30s, low 30s, mm-hmm. really? They spend enough time in there to mellow out, and hopefully they have enough time to think about not returning in there. When I was in there, the short 6 years that I was in there, I've seen people get out and come back two or three different times, Todd. You know, it's up to the person, the individual, to get out there, but they need guidance. They need trades in there. They need to teach people how to pour concrete, how to lay tile. They need to teach the girls how to be nurses. And I'm not stereotypical.
It sounds like what you're suggesting is that I'm rushing you just because we're out of time and I want to get as much in. But you're saying that you're not prepared to be able to function on your own and make a living. And
Todd,
right?
They get out of jail, they get $25, a bus ticket, and the clothes on their back. Think about that.
No,
they
that seems
impossible.
That seems
years in jail.
Yeah, it seems impossible, especially since your life before was not a functional life. I'm sorry. We'll have you back. Peter Thomas, go to his website, areallygreatstory.com. There's some wonderful children's books there you'll want to check out. It's a fascinating story. Peter, thank you. We'll do it again, and we'll get more detail on the work you're doing now, okay?
Todd, thank you. It was a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you again, Tom.
All righty. Great to talk with you.